Hey, dude, guess what tonight?
What?
We have 3 completed bombs. We had used one for a demonstration in New Mexico. We had 2 bombs left. And we had to be very, very careful on how we used those bombs. If one of them turned out to be a dud when we decided to use it, we would be in a situation where our demonstration wouldn't be worth anything.
The fire bombs were devastating, but the demand for surrender was ignored.
Pool Party Radio
believed he had used up his options. He now gave the order that the atomic bomb be dropped under
the Logical Contraption Radio.
It was my purpose to wind up the war as soon as possible. I believe that no man could fail to use the bomb and afterward look his countrymen in the face.
Welcome to Pool Party Radio. This is the podcast where if you want trouble, you got some. I'm your host, Parker, joined as always, Mr. Jason, Razorblades, Shelby Cobras, Cobra Commander, Ronald Reagan, Red Dawn, Frisbee.
Hey, Parker.
How you doing, Mr. Frisbee?
I'm doing okay.
Good, good.
Just being an American bad A. How have you been?
I've been doing pretty good. I've just been, doing the same old stuff, watching Cabin in the Woods and stuff like that, and thinking.
Ooh.
That's all I've been up to. You've seen that Cabin in the Woods, right?
I did see that Cabin in the Woods.
I saw it too. I saw it twice. The second time, though, that I saw it, I went like on a Tuesday afternoon or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it on a Sunday afternoon. And there was a toddler in there for some reason.
Okay.
I don't know, rated R movie with a killer whale. Spoiler alert. I'll bleep that out, actually. Horror movie with a lot of violence in it. Bring in a toddler who was screaming the whole time.
Oh, excellent. That's the best way to watch a film.
Yeah, I know. But, I'm cool. I'm hip. You know, I saw the first Nightmare on Elm Street when I was a youngster in the theater because I had bad parents. And it was the 80s and bad parenting was all the rage. And but apparently I enjoyed it, or so goes the story. So I'm cool. Like, if you want to take a baby to see a horror movie, like, that's cool, so much as the baby is cool. But if you take your baby to see a horror movie, and he's, like, screaming in fear the entire time, maybe it's time to remove that baby.
Yeah, there's a definite limit break with children and the movies. I mean, for the sake of everyone else, at least, in the theater, there's no reason to keep a screaming kid there in the audience. So what happened is, did they do anything, or did they say anything?
No. Like, no, they just kicked it. I mean, well, I guess at some point, I sit very close to the screen, so either at some point the screaming kid just got a little quieter, so much so that I couldn't hear it, or they laughed, or maybe the baby just chilled out or something, because it wasn't the whole time. It was just the parts of the movie where it was quiet, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, it was fine. Like I said, I sit way too close to be bothered by other people, so it worked itself out.
Still, that's very weird.
Yeah, it's really awful. Like, you know, I don't understand this this emotion that we have nowadays when it comes to movie going, that you should just be able to do whatever the fuck you want inside the movie theater, whether that bring your screaming kid, whether that be talking on your phone or just talking to your buddies or complaining throughout the movie. I went to go see Pan's Labyrinth a while back. And I went to go see this movie. I was, like, looking forward to it and stuff. And the kid sitting next to me, or maybe behind me, somewhere near me, they didn't know that it was going to be subtitled. And so rather than just leave the movie and be like, oh, I didn't want to watch a subtitled movie, and like leave and go get maybe get your money back or something, they just complained about how it was subtitled the entire time. And that's the movie climate that we live in these days, where people just don't give a fuck about other people, especially in a movie theater.
I think that climate's persistent in other places, too. And if I have it my way, that would be the theme of every show. It's just the entitlement of most Americans and complaining rather than doing something about it. I mean, we're all guilty of it, but I think day to day that it happens more often than we'd like to admit. But that's terrible. I've never seen that happen in a movie theater.
Yeah, well, that's when it really gets to me. Like, I'm fine if you just want to complain on Facebook that whatever's going on, you know, I had to
read at the movies.
Yeah, or whatever it is, because I can ignore that pretty easily. But when I've paid $800 to go see Cabin in the Woods,
not including your snacks.
Yeah. Then it gets upsetting to me. As a matter of fact, this is taking on the people are taking this discussion to the next level. Apparently, at CinemaCon, people in charge of movie theaters are opening up discussions about whether or not people should be allowed to text during movies. The owners of these movie chains, and I mean, obviously, the go ahead answer should be no. And that's, I read a bunch of stories and like the comments on the news stories about this. And that seems to be the general consensus is no. But at the same time, like, I don't understand why these people are opening up this conversation when it already happens and nobody has ever been punished for texting in a movie or talking through a movie. Like, why do these CEOs need to get together and be like, maybe it's time we let people text in the movies when they already are? I mean, the signs all say don't text or talk during a movie, but I've never seen anybody get thrown out of a movie or even shushed.
Oh man, previous guest of the show Chris Arneson has a fantastic story about when he was working at I think it was a Regals or something like that. It was the movie theater over in Beaver Creek, and there was complaints about this group of kids during some horror film. I forget which one it was. It was something that was like okay but not very good, maybe Van Helsing. He was having like a particularly bad day that day, so he went in and confronted these kids and had to go back and do it again. And these teenagers, who were just like a few years younger than he was, were talking back to him and being like really snotty and all this stuff. And they rubbed him the wrong way. And oh man, we'll have to have him back on to tell this story. But yeah, he actually kicked them out and flicked them all off in front of the entire audience, who applauded him after he did so. It's a great, great little gem of a tale, but that's the long and short of it. So I've never seen it happen, but I know of one instance where it did happen, and it sounded pretty, pretty fantastic.
It should happen all the time. I worked at that same theater that Chris did, and my entire job, basically, aside from like cleaning up spilled popcorn and stuff, was to walk into each movie theater two or three times during the showing and shine a flashlight around the movie screen for some reason, and I guess that's the deterrent that movie theaters have towards texting and talking during a movie, is that you shouldn't do it because like once every 45 minutes, somebody might come in and shine a light on the walls. I don't know. I didn't understand the logic, and nobody could explain it to me when I worked there. But yeah, it doesn't seem like stopping people from talking or texting or being on the phone is a priority to movie theater chains.
Like, there'll be times when I might text before or, like, during the opening sequence of a movie. But that's only because I might have received an urgent message and I'm telling someone about it. What I don't understand is why people don't get more engaged after paying that much. Like you said, $800 for a ticket. I mean, somebody paid, in your instance, $800 to bring in a screaming, fussy child into the movie theater and sit there calmly and just be hated or annoyed with, like, because she wasn't doing anything to rectify that situation. Why pay money to do that? It's like when people pay money to see a movie and then fall asleep, they can be like a little bit more self-deriding in that, like, oh damn, I missed the entire movie. Must not have been that great, but I didn't need to pay $15 to sleep through something.
Yeah, well, I used to feel that way about the cheap movie theaters, like the Danbury's of your, like the second run, like dollar movie theaters.
Yeah, Dollar Saver.
Yeah, I would go to those a lot, and people would talk through those a lot, and I would always kind of write it off because it's like, you know, if you're going to go to a, a $1 movie theater. You know, you get what you pay for. And, like, I always figured that that's what people were into. Like, they just accepted that, eh, you know, you're not out at, like, a ton of money. You need to, you know, if people talk during this, it's whatever. And I never really heard a lot of people talking or doing anything shitty in, like, the first-run movie theaters for, like, a long time until recently. When Angry Birds came out. And
right.
So it kind of threw my theory out the window that, if I'm paying a dollar for this, whatever, people get to talk. Out the window because, you know, now you're paying $15 a ticket. So now I guess maybe it's the other way around. Maybe if people are spending so much money, then they feel, like you said, entitled to just be able to talk and do whatever they want.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a role reversal, but it's that same idea. It's like, I've got a phone. I had money to pay to, you know, spend time here. So why shouldn't I be allowed to do this or anything else that I foresee as completely rude and arrogant behavior anywhere else in society? There's no consideration for anybody else in the theater. That's my problem with this kind of thing.
Yeah. These CEOs that got together, though, they are considering this because people are going to the movie theaters less. So they're saying, oh, if we let these people text, then they'll go more, which I don't think is the case at all. I think if every single person in the movie theater is texting, then a lot less people will go to movies. Because, you know, especially now, like, when a movie comes out and you can pay $12 to go see it, or you can wait about 6 hours and wait for somebody to post it online.
Right.
Where you can watch it comfortably with nobody talking.
Absolutely.
I don't understand. Like, they should be going the other way with this. Like, they should say, you know, if somebody says one peep during the movie, we will kick the shit out of them and let everybody watch it. I think that would get more people into the movies than this mess.
You think so? Because I'm not so certain what it is that they're trying to appeal to in this decision. I agree with you that this isn't the right discussion to be having at this moment. But I wonder what it would be to get people back into the movie theaters. And it's not going to be like anti-pirating. I think they need to do something to the effect of just bumping up what the movie experience is. And part of that's, you know, making better movies and charging less money for them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another part. Yeah, like, also people aren't stopping their movie-going experiences because they're saying, oh, well, if I can't text during the movie, I just won't go to the movie. They're saying, oh, I don't want to see Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Right.
And
right.
Fucking bullshit like this. And Jason Sudeikis in every other fucking movie. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. I don't need to see Jason Sudeikis being snarky, standing there with his hands in his khakis, giving a shitty grin to like every dumb thing that happens between him and whoever else is on screen. It doesn't matter. He's always going to be the straight man. Oh, God, that bugs me. That bugs me because I know he's capable of doing so much more. Like, you remember seeing him at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater? We were there.
Was he there?
Yeah. That was like back in 2005 or 2006.
Something like that, yeah. I had no idea who Jason Sudeikis was at the time. I don't watch Saturday Night Live. I only know him because he's in every movie.
He's genuinely like a good improviser, but I don't know. He's going through this weird like, ooh, what is it? It's almost like an Adam Sandler thing. Well, not an Adam Sandler thing, because Adam Sandler was trying to be crazy and wacky. There's another comedian I'm thinking of. It's not coming to my mind right now, though, but somebody who's like, I'm just going to be the straight man. Totally uninteresting and not very funny. But here I am commenting on what's going on around me. Hum-da-dum.
Yeah, it's awful. He's awful. So that's the reason why people aren't going to movies.
Jason Sudeikis.
It's not because, you know, and also, people, you know, these movie theaters are coming up with like the stupidest fucking ideas to get people into movies. Like, obviously 3D is on its way out. And now when I go to the movie theater in my local movie theater, they have this thing called the D-Box. Do you know about the box?
No, but I'm pretty sure I was called that multiple times in high school.
Well, it's this thing. It's basically like the what's it? Streets of Thunder at Kings Island, where it's in it, and the seat wiggles around during exciting parts of the movie.
Your chair just got excited.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. And the kicker, like me and my wife, we went to go see Hunger Games a few weeks ago. And we were like, just for like ironically almost, like we were like, hey, you want to sit in this D-Box and wiggle around during the exciting parts of Hunger Games? And so we were going to do it. We figured it'd be like $3 more or something like this. No, it's twice as much money if you want to sit in the D-Box.
What?
Yeah, so the tickets for both of us, like, would have went from, like, $25 to $50 to sit in this wiggly seat.
Yeah, there's nothing worth it about that.
Yeah, which I'm glad I didn't do because I slept through a lot of Hunger Games.
That reminds me of the Nintendo 64 Rumble Pack. Do you remember that?
Oh.
It was that add-on to the back of the controller. Oh, what a piece of shit that was.
Yeah, that was...
It was so embarrassing. Yeah, like the PlayStation 2 had those Sony controllers that actually did it much better. Like, it was already implanted, so you're just paying the same for whatever controller you had, and it would just... It actually had this sort of vibration control. With the Nintendo, I don't remember it being all that regulated. So no matter what happened, it was just like, and it would just shake violently. But with the PlayStation, it actually used it for atmosphere and mood in the game. But still.
Yeah, that probably, if I would have gone and sat in the D-Box, it probably would have just reminded me of the shaking controllers for Xbox and stuff. So, like, instead of Katniss, like, getting into an exciting arrow fight, like, and then, like, my seat shaking around, like, instead of just building tension for that arrow fight, I would have been like, oh, no, Paul Pierce is playing really good defense on me right now. What do I do?
Yeah, yeah.
I have
You're having flashbacks to your video gaming.
Yeah, I have to pass to the guy sitting a couple of rows up.
Plus, I don't know how you could respect yourself if you had to go around telling people that you sat in the D-Box.
Yeah, I know.
This sounds like a penalty. It's like, did you do something extraordinarily douchey today? D-Box, 5 minutes.
Yeah,
this is such a silly name. Why is it called D-Box? Why don't you just use, like, Excitement Box or something? Yeah. Oh, that's not much better, actually, if you want to be vulgar about it. But anything else?
I have no idea. But that's their plan, is to let people text and to add D-Boxes, and then more people will go to the movies. It's fucking absurd.
This D-Box is having the same effect on me as Old Cat. Like, I can't think about the term D-Box without smiling ear to ear. It's so silly sounding. Extreme Seats. They could have called it anything else.
Yeah. They could have called it the Wiggly Chair.
Yeah. Do you want to go sit in the Wiggly Chair?
That sounds weird. Yeah. That sounds like something that the British would come up with, since they talk babies all the time anyway. Oi, hey. Crikey. Let's go sit in the Wiggly Chair, eh, mate? And watch the new Mr. Bean show on the telly.
I don't know about that. Why would you watch a Mr. Bean movie in the D-Box or the Wiggly Chairs?
I don't know. Who knows? Those pretty. Why
the Australians, though, have the wiggles.
They do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. No, I don't know about that.
I like how sad you get when I make fun of the British.
It's a silent... Well, yeah. I like Rowan Atkinson quite a great deal. Moving right along, I had an interesting movie experience this weekend. Guess what movie I saw on Record Store Day?
What movie is that?
You'll never guess.
I don't know. Something about records, I'm guessing?
It's your favorite movie about records, I'm guessing.
Is it High Fidelity?
Nope.
Oh.
And I'm being completely ironic when I say it's your favorite movie about records.
I kind of figured.
It's Empire Records.
Oh, that's even... Well, it's probably a little bit better than High Fidelity.
Yeah.
Guara's in it.
They are in it.
Did you watch this at a record store, or were you, like, just super into the holiday?
No, I saw it at the Neon Movies. I was not into the holiday at all. I didn't go to any of the shows or buy a record or anything. I didn't pet a record that day. I was basically on my own. I almost forgot about it until I was invited to the showing and said, yeah, that sounds like fun. I haven't seen that movie in over a decade. Then I felt extremely old because I could say that I haven't seen a movie that I remembered seeing in over a decade. Terrifying.
No, Liv Tyler's a fox.
Yeah, and I forget the other girl's name.
Bridget Jones?
Yeah, Bridget Jones. She's a fox in that movie. At the time, yeah. Her singing's not good, but it's in there as well.
Yeah. Ethan Embry's in there.
Mm-hmm.
He made things very hard for Dutch over that Thanksgiving break. In the hit film Dutch.
Yeah. And, of course, Rex Manning's in it, too.
Yeah. Were any toddlers there? Anybody talking on their cell phones or anything?
No, but there was some hilarious crack-up scenes. And this actually goes back to something else I want to touch upon from a friend of the podcast, the Illogical Contraption guys. But I'll get to that in a second. There was, you know, it's the Neon Movies, so they allowed drinking there and everything. And the typical crowd for, like, the Neon Movies doesn't do a lot of talking during the film or interruptions or anything like that, and don't really bring a kid in there. It's a little art house theater. But since this was a special showing, it was really cheap. And people were getting really drunk all day, apparently. There was a group of quasi-hipsters, or once were hipsters. I don't know how you'd say it. Like post-hipsters, I guess. Hipsters. We'll just call them hipsters. Sitting behind us. I didn't know them, but I guess they were friends with the people I was with. And this one guy who was double fisting had a huge laughing fit when it was Bridget Jones. Renee Zellweger, that's her name. When it was Renee Zellweger trying to coach Liv Tyler into her first sexual experience with this character in the movie, the Rex Manning character, who's kind of like a Danny Bonaducci like a guy who is past his teen beat phase, and he's like 50. So she's, Liv Tyler's got this schoolgirl crush and wants to lose her virginity to Rex Manning. And Renee Zellweger's character is coaching her through it. She's like, oh, you'll be fine. And you two will just have a perfect union. And this kid behind me, who was double fisting these beers, started dying in laughter, just rolling, like, perfect union. What the fuck is going on? I guess he had never seen the film before, but he has every right to be laughing at that line because it was ridiculous. But for a solid minute, like, he was just laughing at that one phrase that was probably not supposed to be intentionally funny, but he found to be hysterical. By proxy, it was hysterical to everybody else around him. Well, that was as loud as it got, though.
He's like, he has clearly never had sex then, because it is a perfect union. Let me tell you what.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what his story was, but he was absolutely right. It was a very silly line. But the raucousness of a movie theater, that was something that was discussed on Electrical Contraption, I think like a few months ago. They were talking about, I think, the Castle films, which also reminds me of the D-Box thing that you were just talking about. Like wiggly chairs that react to the movie. There used to be, what was it, the Chiller or something? And it's where they had the seats buzzed with like a little vibration sensor. Oh, it's supposed to buzz during the movie.
Yeah, because of that electricity monster that's in it.
Right, right. Yeah, so it's like there's that interaction that has something to do with the storyline of the film that they bring into the audience. But back then, well, probably not in the 50s, but like 60s, 70s, and definitely the 80s, like whenever I watch a film about the 80s that was made in the 80s and it shows people watching a film in that film, like the crowd's always going nuts to the level of like rock and roll high school nuts. Like everybody's going ballistic. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like especially films that take place in New York and then the film carries into a movie theater and it's just like a bunch of people like yelling at the screen like, hey, down in front, I'm trying to watch this, blah, blah, blah. Oh, don't go in there, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think we were talking about this sort of thing on Junk Food Dinner a couple of weeks ago, where up until like 1968, humanity wasn't used to watching moving pictures on a screen. So everybody just thought that things that were happening on screen were real. So they were just going nuts the entire time. Like those people who would go and pay a nickel to watch like footage of a train on Coney Island. And then they would all run out of the movie theater because they thought they were going to get hit by the train.
In 68.
Yeah, that's how it was. All the way, like, from whenever Thomas Edison or whoever invented moving pictures, all the way up until Night of the Living Dead came out. And then that's when movies started being modern. Up until then, it was just people freaking out because they thought the creature from the Black Lagoon was real. And he was being kept in a little box up on a stage.
Right, absolutely.
So that would make sense. That's why they were all freaking out. And that's why people freaked out if a plastic skeleton came down out of the rafters during House on Haunted Hill.
Do you think you would have seen a movie if somebody sold that to you? It's like, dude, I'm not going to tell you anything about the film, but there's this plastic skeleton that comes down and it'll blow your mind. Would you have seen it, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I would see that now. Like if somebody was like, yo, Like if somebody called me and they're like, hey, Parker, we know that you're going to go see the Avengers and they're getting rid of the D-Box at your local theater. But instead, during all the fight scenes, a guy dressed up like Captain America is going to kick the shit out of some guys dressed up like the Skrulls. I would love that.
Yeah, that does sound really great, doesn't it?
Yeah. In fact, they used to do stuff like that at the Regal Theater. I think there was some movie that came out where they had people fighting outside Star Wars or something, or Harry Potter or something.
Those probably just fans. I don't think that had anything to do with the production company.
I think they paid people to come out.
No shit. That'd be awesome. Did you ever go to Page Manor when they were doing like, they had that Friday the 13th showing?
Yeah, I saw Freddy vs. Jason there once. I think I was like the only person there.
I remember they got a film reel of the original Friday the 13th with Kevin Bacon and showed it on Friday the 13th, like around like 10. And it was packed. And they did like all that matinee shit. Like they had not only Jason like come out and pick out actors from like the crowd during those murder scenes. Like if something intense happened on screen, like somebody was getting, you know, fake murdered in the audience. Like Jason would burst out from the back or from the front and grab that person, or, you know, Mrs. Voorhees, whatever you want to call it. Like the guy in the mask, actor in the mask would pull his person from the end, like from the aisleway, and be like, come here, you're coming with me. And, you know, fake stab that person and everything. And the crowd just ate it up so much. And then they like brought out other creatures like the Hellraiser, like the main Cenobite Hellraiser. He came out and like grabbed somebody. And then by the end, it just got really fucking ridiculous. Like they were doing backyard wrestling because that was all the rage at the time.
Yeah, that sounds sweet.
Yeah, somebody got like powerbombed. And it's like, oh, okay. That, I've never seen that happen in any horror film, but yeah, all right. That's maybe a way to kill someone.
Well, there's a wrestling themed horror film called WrestleManiac. I bet somebody gets powerbombed in that.
Probably.
I need to see that.
But yeah, that was rad. And that was like the most raucous movie theater that I've ever been in. And that reminds me of like, I don't know. Like there's a scene in The Last Dragon, I'm pretty certain, where the fight, this kung fu fight takes itself into a movie theater. It's this crowd and people are just going apeshit, like throwing stuff and making out and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, I've never seen that level of disruption in a movie theater. That's what they're talking about in Illogical Contraption, too, was that they had experienced, like, when they were younger, going to movies and people just going nuts, like kids mainly going nuts, watching films like Bill and Ted and all this.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they didn't have they didn't have the Grand Theft Auto back then.
True.
They needed to freak out over something. I don't know. I'm glad that shit doesn't happen. When I go to pay to see a movie, I want to watch a fucking movie.
Yeah, not like be disrupted by a bunch of kids and shit.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into some shenanigans. Like, if you're going to go and like be raucous, like just fucking do what normal kids do. Just go to the gas station, get some old scrubby looking dude to buy you some Mad Dog 2020, and then go to a park and get drunk and break some bottles, and then that's how you have fun. It's not going to a movie theater and talking loudly.
Okay. Yeah.
God damn it. You sons of bitches.
You are violent tonight.
I'm angry today for some reason. It's so hot. It's just so goddamn hot. I've been angry all week.
What, in California it's hot?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rainy as hell here lately. It's just dull. Like dull weather. I was wondering what it was like out there because it's been like cold for the longest time here.
Well, it's not cold. It's angry weather. I'm angry.
Angry hot weather.
So angry this week. I've been yelling at everybody. I yelled at Kevin on Junk Food Dinner because he's on Last FM. Just upset.
What's wrong with Last FM?
Oh, it was this big long thing. I don't want to get into it.
But you can listen to it at junkfooddinner.com or on iTunes.
Yeah.
Part of the Red Band Network. RedBandNetwork.com.
Now we are going to do a thing on the show called, formerly called, Frisbee Got Mail. This is a segment where Frisbee reads mail and stuff. It used to be called Frisbee Got Mail, but now it is called, due to Frisbee's new attitude and his new theme music, this is now a segment called Put Your Fingers in the Air So Frisbee Can See Where They At.
I didn't sign off on this. Our email this week comes from a friend and listener of the show, Blake. It's titled Summons for Your Brother's Wedding, and he addresses it, Gentlemen, I didn't get to my brother's wedding either. This is, of course, in reference to Parker's admission on the show that he's probably not going to be able to make it to his younger brother's wedding, Money Matt's wedding. Is that still the case, or did anything change with that?
Oh, no, that is the case. In fact, he's getting married this weekend.
Oh, that sucks. You should be here, where it's going to be sucky weather and everything.
I would love that sucky weather, because this 95-degree shit sucks. It's making me upset.
I'm kind of upset, but my attitude's preventing me from doing that. All this music is just pumping me up more and more, I think. He says he didn't go to his brother's wedding either, and that wedding was in Dayton while he was in Columbus. He says, you have a legit reason for not going. I'm an hour away. And I said, God, an hour? Forget it. My parents didn't guilt trip me about it, though. They don't like the wife, and there's anyone else in the world. As a matter of fact, my parents marginalize everything. My dad called me the other day. You know your aunt died. And Blake says, no, Aunt Sue? I didn't know that, Dad. How are you feeling about that? Oh, it's no big deal. You only need to go to the funeral. I know you're busy. Well, how are you holding up? Oh, it's fine. I wasn't that close to her. Your sister? You weren't very close with her? Nah. Now, if it was my twin sister, that would be different. I figure I'll end the conversation at that. Resume more small talk, then ended the conversation with Dad saying, I don't want your pizza getting cold. Party hard. Talk to you sometime. So why is your mom annoyed that you won't travel all the way across the country and dodge jury duty to see your brother?
Yeah, I wish that I had that kind of family. Like, that's the way I was raised, where, like, nobody in my family, like, really talked or shared feelings or, like, cared about anything. And yet they're all, like, very testy. And, like, you know, like a month and a half ago when I told my mom, like, no, I really don't want to travel for 8 days to spend, you know, 6 hours in Dayton to see this wedding. That doesn't sound fun. I haven't talked to my mom or my brother since then. Like, despite the fact that we're a very lackadaisical sort of family in terms of we don't care about each other. Like, those guys hold on to a grudge when you don't show up to things they want you to show up to. It's very weird.
Yeah, so this is a different experience for you then.
Yeah, it's certainly weird. It's not something I'm used to. Like, you know, my other side of the family, they are very into hanging out and partying. Like, my dad's side of the family, like, they love to get together and have celebrations.
Just Andrew WK all over the place.
Yeah, they like they get wet. And yeah, so you know, like, whenever a party or something was going on, like, I would always feel compelled to go because that's the way things go on that side of the family. But this, you know, my mom's, you know, on my mom's side and stuff, like, it's not ever like that. Like, I mean, we would have birthday parties. Like, I'd be like, hey, it's my birthday, Mom. And she'd be like, oh, well, you know, you can order a pizza if you want. I'm going out to get drunk. And stuff like that. So now when something has arisen that people are actually into, it's very confusing. It's I wasn't expecting this sort of thing. But still, the crux of, you know, why I didn't go, like Blake Sell said, and I've talked about a couple episodes ago, is that, you know, I would have to travel for like 8 days, literally like 5 days to hang out in Dayton for 1 day, which I didn't want to do because I don't want to travel for 5 days. And I also don't want to be in Dayton for 1 day because I want to party with my man Frisbee. I want to put my fingers in the air so he can see where I'm at.
Word. That's the only way I can visualize anyone now.
You're like a T-Rex.
Yep.
Yeah. And I wanted to see, you know, some of my buddies and stuff like this. And of course, so, you know, I didn't want to just hang out for like 4 hours and then get back into a car, which I don't think is unreasonable, but maybe I'm a crazy person. Do you think I'm unreasonable, Mr. Frisbee?
No, that's a lot of traveling time just for 1 day. Like you mentioned, it'd be like 2.5 days to get into town, then 2.5 days to get back.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
I would have to drive from my house to LA and then fly from LA to Chicago and then drive from Chicago to Milwaukee and then drive from Milwaukee to Dayton. And then do the same thing back. That's too much.
And honestly, any travel plan that has a crux that relies on Los Angeles for any reason sounds like a fucking terrible idea.
Yeah. And I mean, my mom, when I was like 10, she used to give me crap if I would suggest we go to Videotown to rent Jason Part 6. Now she wants me to travel 5,000 miles. It's ironic.
I'm so glad you remember Videotown. Like, I'm sure we probably bumped into each other at that Videotown on Old Troy.
Only if you were standing in front of the Elvira cardboard cutout.
I was going to mention the Chucky cardboard cutout. That thing used to fascinate and horrify me. Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. My brother was very frightened of it.
Yeah, it's awful. Awful looking thing. While the Elvira one was sexually confusing when you're that young.
Oh, it was like, erotic.
It's very sexual. But yeah, that place was great. Video towny. That's weird how it changes, though, where it was a huge deal just to go to the video store. And now it's the ordeal is going to see family.
I'm sure I'll see them one day when we all get on a boat and go west and die like the elves from Lord of the Rings.
Did you watch that again this weekend?
No. I just saw I watched it a couple of weeks ago. I can't watch it again. It's too much. Too much for one man like me to watch over and over.
Too much fantasy?
Yeah, way too much.
Are you playing that Skyrim or no?
No, I got Oblivion finally because I'm like I've said on the show, like it takes me forever to get into something that's new. Like I'm always behind on everything. So I just got Oblivion, which is the game before Skyrim. So I guess I should play that. I should stop getting played hard defense upon by Paul Pierce in NBA 2K12 and play Oblivion, I suppose.
It's probably for the best. You don't want to harbor some sort of unrealistic grudge against Paul Pierce.
Oh, it's not unrealistic. I hate that son of a bitch. If I met that guy in real life, man, I'm totally going to body check him for playing that hard defense on me.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't do that. He'll have no idea what you're doing.
I'm going to get a flagrant too.
And now, it's time for the lightning round.
First up on the lightning round, U.S. bill would make crash data black boxes mandatory in cars. There's an amendment to a current U.S. transportation bill that would require all cars to record data in the event of a crash, a move that has some worried about privacy concerns. Provision in the MAP-21 Act would authorize its federal highway spending and programs would require manufacturers to put event data recorders, or EDRs, or black boxes, in automobiles by 2015. I don't know how necessary this is.
It's not necessary at all. Like, I think 9 times out of 10 when there's a wreck on the road, cops are able to deduce why it happened. And if they can't, who cares? Like, what's done is done. Who cares? If you stumble upon a wreck and some guy has skidded off the road into a tree and is dead, I mean, is finding out how fast he was going at the time going to bring him back? I mean, who gives a crap?
What perplexes me about this is that when you have a black box in an airplane, you might be getting some data that would not go over on a radio frequency for a job that requires a lot of communication anyway, for the traveling that's being done. I mean, the pilots in the cockpit are in constant communication with somebody on the ground. And that's kind of the point, is like if the radio goes out, some electrical fire, they can tell like what they were trying to do in those last moments. Or it can help determine whether like somebody was drunk or something, or help analyze that voice just to make sure there wasn't anything foul about the pilots there. So in any case, they can learn from it. And with these automobile accidents, you're not really in communication with anyone. Like, I can't imagine anyone veering off me like, oh God, I should have been texting or anything like that. I mean, you might be able to get somebody who's on a phone while they're in a crash. So you can tell like the person's on the phone saying, you know, this sucks, but I'm going to die from this car crash that I'm about to get into. Peace. But then again, like he's already talking to someone on the cell phone. Like they would know his last moments. Hey, they might not admit to it, but then again, like what's the point? The phone's going to be exposed anyway. They can probably check the cell phone and just see if that person was doing a call.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that necessary considering how we use black boxes currently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, with a black box on a plane, like, you know, you if you're running a business and you hired a dude to fly your airplanes that belong to you, then maybe you'd be interested why your plane crashed, like what happened to your pilot causing a plane to wreck and kill hundreds of people, possibly. But when it's just one dude, like, I mean, who cares? Like, a guy runs off the road and he dies, like, I mean, it's probably sad and everything, but I mean, you don't need to find out the who's and the what's and the where's and the why's. Like, it happens a lot. And I mean, with planes, like, I mean, there's millions more car wrecks than there are plane wrecks. So it's, you know, you kind of need to find out the details about the plane wrecks more. But it says that these black boxes in automobiles would record the speed and acceleration of a vehicle, whether or not an airbag was deployed, and whether the seatbelt was buckled. All of these things you can find out without a black box. Like, you can find out by, you know, the tracks, like the skid marks left on a road, how fast a car was going and stuff like this. And you can just look with your eyes to see if an airbag was deployed, you know, like just look in the window there and see it. Same thing with the fucking seatbelt. Like, you can just look in. I mean, unless, like, there is a group of people who are similar to meter maids who go by all the car wrecks and unfasten everybody's seatbelts in the car wreck and then leave. I don't see what the fucking point is for this.
It's so weird you mentioned that because I've done that before.
This is going to confuse the hell out of the first responders.
I wasn't even thinking about that. I'm just like, well, this doesn't seem right. Going to unbuckle all these safety belts from this car crash. Yeah, I don't get this. This is very half-baked, it seems like, right? I mean, that's what the conclusion is.
It's absolutely stupid. And in a time when nobody is buying cars anyway, to add something to a car that's probably going to make it cost more seems ridiculous as well, especially when it's something you don't need. How about rather than installing black boxes, making that mandatory, how about you make it mandatory for cars to run on less gasoline? Let's make that mandatory, eh?
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's make it mandatory for the speakers to not go out when I play my music loud.
I know we usually have at odds with each other, but that's actually sincerely a very good idea. Like, why wouldn't that be more of a concern? Or to ensure that tires don't blow out, like, automatically.
Yeah.
Like, you could be doing so many more safety checks on automobiles, considering how many crashes there are, instead of this weird, like, tracking and detail analysis of what happens during a crash.
Yeah, it's silly. It's ridiculous. What's the next thing that we got?
Our next story is about a disease that causes people to make jokes and puns constantly. So this is right up your alley, I imagine.
Absolutely. I am very afraid of this. When I first saw this, I was like, oh, that's cute. You know, let me read more about this story. And apparently it's caused by strokes. Which,
or just brain damage to the right frontal orbital lobe.
Yeah. But if you remember from a few episodes ago, I'm very afraid of having a stroke. So now this is combining two, like, something that I'm very afraid of with something that I think I might have because I really love puns, especially considering the fact that, like, a couple of weeks ago, I just sat down and made a bunch of Game of Thrones puns on Twitter. And my wife made fun of me, and she said there was something wrong with me for doing that. Like, I mean, I made like 30 of them or something. I only put a few of them on Twitter, but I made like a whole bunch of them. And so now I'm really worried, because if I'm making puns to the point to where my wife says there's something wrong with me, I think maybe I have this. I need to go to the doctor's office, Frisbee.
After she said that, did you unintentionally shit your pants? Because that was probably a telltale sign that you've had a stroke.
Yeah, when she told me that... you know, when she told me there might be something wrong with me because I make puns so much, you know, and that I might have had a stroke.
This condition is called Witzelsicht or Witzelsicht. It's a German word. And apparently it just diminishes all sorts of like social graces and replaces it with puns, constant joking.
Yeah. So, yeah. It makes sense that the Germans would think that making jokes is a disease, since they're the unfunniest people on earth. The most serious buttholes in the whole world. If you make a joke or a pun around them, of course, they're going to think that you're a diseased person.
I don't know anybody who's actually suffered through this, although you kind of have been around people who do this all the goddamn time, and not just on Twitter. Like, your Twitter puns are very much out of control, but I don't think you have this thing. And puns are great, like, every once in a while. But actually, this article has a pretty funny comment on puns in general when it discusses this. It says, there aren't that many ways to treat the condition. Doctors can try behavioral therapy, like constantly and patiently explaining that puns aren't funny. Ever. That's what it says in the article. puns aren't funny, period. And then it goes on to make a complete standalone statement ever, period.
Well, that guy's a butthole.
He must be German, apparently. Our next story, New Zealand considering charging $100 for a pack of cigarettes. Consider that $100 in New Zealand money would be about $81 US, but still, that is a ton of money for cigarettes. This doesn't apply to me since you're not going to be smoking or anything.
Oh, freedom applies to us all, Mr. Frisbee. This applies.
Freedom of choice, like to not smoke because the price went up?
Yeah, freedom of anything. They start charging $100 for cigarettes. Soon they're going to start charging $100 to look at the Onion AV Club. Then where will you be?
I'm watching the bootleg version of Onion AV Club.
Yeah, that you had to get in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, mirror sights, whatever. It'll work.
You'll have to watch it.
I won't be able to comment, but I don't do that anyway. Because those dudes already have it down to a science. I cannot interfere.
Yeah, you'll have to print it out and then put it up to a mirror to read it. Like how they get by with putting Adventure Time on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll have to read it through the mirror.
Yeah. This is ridiculous. Like, I don't smoke, but I find, this endeavor by authorities to make people stop smoking by taxing them, I think it's just devilish and awful. I think for a government system to say, hey, we know what's best for you. We know that smoking will make your life better, and we're going to enforce it, whether you like it or not. I think it's absurd. If people want to smoke, who the fuck cares? There's a place outside of Sacramento here that's going to make it so that you can't even smoke inside your apartment, which is absurd. It's craziness.
Oh, it's like a federal thing, rather than just like the landowner saying you can't smoke in the apartment.
Yeah, yeah. No matter what the landowner says, the government says you can't smoke. But this $100 thing, like, that's even worse, because then, I mean, these people are literally addicted. Like, when a few years ago, when the cigarette taxes went up, so did people breaking into convenience stores and stealing cigarettes. Like, that's what happens when you raise the prices of things that people are addicted to. People do things that they wouldn't normally do to get them.
Like that prostitute who would have sex for cheeseburgers.
Exactly.
Dollar cheeseburgers. Now, that's not a realistic comparison. I just thought that was funny. Like, drastic measures for cheeseburgers and cigarettes.
And cheeseburgers taste good as fuck.
Yeah. I guess I'm not that invested in this story. The price hike is really high, though. And one thing that I read around the report of this was the concern that there was going to be some sort of black market for cigarettes. They're weighing the pros and, well, not pros and cons. They're weighing whether that would actually be a thing or not. Like whether people would actually try to find underground illicit means to get cigarettes. In which case, like if that's what they're banking on, if that's an actual plausibility, then it sounds like this isn't just to, you know, ban smoking for health concerns, but also to give police something else to do.
Yeah, well, this has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with people's health. If you wanted to help people's healths, rather than taxing, raising the taxes on cigarettes by 8,000%, you would maybe just offer them free memberships to the gym, or you would subsidize carrots or something like this. This is a way for the New Zealand government to make money. That's all. Like, anytime something like this happens where, oh, you know, we don't think that, soda is good for you, so we're going to raise the taxes on soda by a dollar. Like, no, that's you wanting money. And using a stupid, flimsy excuse to get it. It has nothing to do with people's health. You would just, if it was about health, they would just ban cigarettes altogether rather than add this tax.
So that's another thing is, like, I don't know what the debt is in New Zealand or what they expect to pay for, but it's just a weird increase to have over the coming years to do like a 30% increase each year. Yeah, it's strange, and I don't know why it would be up that much, but oh well.
Well, it goes
don't up. Don't smoke, kids. Dude, I guess that's the lesson.
Smoke. Fight the man. Fight him. Smoke all you want. Smoke every day.
That's cost an exorbitant amount of money, though. Why would you suggest that to people in New Zealand?
Well, I say grow your own. You know what I'm saying? Get some blacklight posters and get some things of that nature.
I think you're talking about a completely different type of tobacco.
Grow it in your mom's basement. Smoke the hell out of it.
Put up lots of tinfoil.
Get some Cheech and Chong DVDs and smoke this tobacco.
It's your victory garden. Up next on the lightning round, students complain about sexually explicit video in a human sexuality class. Professor Peggy Gish was teaching a class at Fresno State University on human sexuality and found herself on the defensive after one idiotic and very vocal student accused Gish of showing the class, quote, pornography, unquote. And the story is reported here. The video was titled Advanced Sexual Techniques Volume 1, contained both sexually explicit audio and graphic video. And what it doesn't say in what we were reading is that all that happened was that a student tweeted about the class on their Twitter account, just saying, I believe it was like, we watched a porn in class, LOL, awkward. And this got in the hands of a conservative blog reporter, Oliver Darcy, who, investigating this, found out the name of the video and everything, and posted a blog entry about the tweet to the website campusreform.org, which apparently is just trying to make universities less leftist. It was a tweet, and it included LOL in the tweet. So that just seems silly to me. Like that any of this got escalated to an out of hand, that somebody felt necessary to write a blog about it. When I think it's in this story, it mentions that the instructor even included in the syllabus, there will be graphic audio and visuals in this class, and you're welcome to leave during any of those discussions or drop the class, you know?
Yeah. It's like if you were taking a math class and like you complained that there were numbers involved. I don't know. It seems silly. This whole thing seems silly. But I do think it's weird. Like the video is apparently described as attractive real-life couples explicitly demonstrate adventurous new techniques. I don't understand why you need to find out about that at school.
Well, it's a human sexuality class.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, is that what the class is? Is like teaching you how to like be really good at sex?
I think it's teaching the psychology and repercussions of being intimate, of having sex.
But you don't need to find out about adventurous new techniques to find out about the psychology of what happens to you when you have sex.
Apparently it was recommended by the textbook for the class.
Oh, well, if it's recommended by the textbook.
Yeah.
Who cares if it's recommended by the textbook? Of course it's recommended by the textbook. The textbook, all textbooks do is recommend you to buy more stuff and to watch things so that they don't have to write extensively about it.
Well, listen, I mean, yeah, I doubt this is like a McGraw-Hill textbook where it's just going to implant some bullshit DVD that's not really that helpful. It's just that's the name of the class. It's like you were saying, you're not going to go into a math class and be like, oh, fuck this. I didn't know there were numbers involved. It's like, it's a sexuality class. Why wouldn't you be watching or studying about being sexual, being intimate?
Did you ever have a class where you discovered uninhibited positions that lead to pleasure, satisfaction, and closeness?
Yeah, actually.
Geography?
I was going to say culinary arts, but yeah.
I really like geography.
Geography was tectonic plates, shifting continents.
That's good stuff.
Those are graphic mountains. The Grand Tetons. There you go. That's sexual.
That is sexual. But yeah, I wish that I could have taken, like, I don't understand the point of this class, but I really wish that I could have taken it because I think that I would be really good.
I mean,
I watch porn all the time. I think I would be like so good at the porn class.
You're watching it now.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to write my thesis on Lois Ares from The Devil and Miss Jones 3 and 4.
Would you do it on the Backdoor to China tapes?
No, most certainly not. That was actually requested. Somebody requested we do that for Junk Food Dinner the other day. that would disappoint you.
No, it's. I mean, I'd like to hear the critique on it. That's all. But yeah, that would be like your destructiveness of porn society. You just bring up that movie again and again.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, like, these students have an idea of what they're getting into. Like, the syllabus pretty much dictates that. Like, you know what textbook you're going to have. Most syllabuses, and this person's been in it for 25 years, would outline what kind of videos they'd be watching, if any. She said that when she took a similar class in the 70s, that it included the same thing. It's between the student and the people who enroll into the class to make that class possible. Like, this class wouldn't be taught to an empty classroom with, you know, dollars being wasted. This person's doing the class because people are interested. But anyway, like, it's, that being said, yeah, I don't know if I would have much interest in taking it unless I was like a psychology major or something, or just extremely horny.
Well, I understand the point of the class. Like, it says here that the class explores physiological, psychological, social, cultural, and developmental considerations for lifelong understanding related to sexuality. But I don't understand why you have to watch videos of people having sex to understand that.
Here's the weird thing. This actually reminds, you bringing this up reminds me of a story from like, what was it, 6-7 years ago. There was a couple in, I believe it was like Berlin or Germany, and they had gotten married. They were very religiously devout. And once they got married, they did not know how to have sex with each other. No one bothered to explain it to them. And there was like no natural inclination that they could reason about what to do with their junk. On the other side, to put it in layman's terms.
If you can't, like, if you're trying to consummate your marriage and you can't figure out that the penis goes inside the vagina, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, man. 5-year-olds figure that shit out every day on the playground.
Oh, man.
But most 5-year-olds have been molested, to be fair.
To be fair, yes. But in middle school, I remember, like, there was a friend who thought that, like, this kid was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's, the girls have babies through their butts, and that's how it works. Like, that's, something happens, like some magic happens, and you poop out a baby. And I was like, ah, that doesn't sound right.
Is that not accurate?
That is not accurate.
Oh.
I'm concerned about your views on sex now. Maybe you should be taking this class. It is in Fresno.
Yeah, I should probably take this class.
It sounds like you're at a basic level of sexual understanding. You might need advanced techniques at this point.
Playful secrets.
Absolutely playful secrets.
Yeah, I should probably take this class. But yeah, seriously, like, if you're married and you can't figure out that the penis goes in the vagina, then you don't deserve to find out the penis goes in the vagina. And those two people are probably, like, stupid retards. And, I mean, they wouldn't give...
No, listen, I know you're pissed today. And
I'm very upset.
I applaud, like, you're calling out these people as being stupid retards. But let's do a thought experiment, though, because this story still blows my mind. And again, like, I'm only thinking of it like 6 years down the line because you mentioned, like, who doesn't know how to do this stuff? I mean, yeah, think about it from the perspective of someone who's not watching porn all the time or was like never, not even discussed by friends or, you know, parents. Hey, here's the bird and the bees thing, penis and vajay.
It's very obvious. If you're sitting naked.
But would they be sitting naked? I mean, they might just like crawl under the covers and just stare at each other in the eyes. And like, that's it. Like, not look below the neck or something.
I think that they were probably looking below the neck. I mean.
In horror and confusion, maybe.
Who teaches monkeys how to have sex? Everybody just knows how to have sex. You wake up at the age of 13 and you just know how to have sex. Like,
well, monkeys don't have like any sort of social indoctrination to tell them, like, hey, you have to be pure of heart or anything like that. Again, this is like a religiously devout couple. Like, if they have impure thoughts, then they're fucked. So,
well, then they don't need to have sex. We don't need more of that.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can't figure it out, then good.
Good riddance to non-existent babies. Yeah, they went to go see a therapist, though, and they had no idea. They were sincerely confused.
They were like, how do we have sex? What do we do?
No, they were just like, you know, we want to have children, but we don't know how. Like, that was the next step.
You get the internet or, like, a book?
They wouldn't check that stuff out, man. Like, they are all about this one book, and that's it.
I don't know. I think that people who are, like, devoutly Christian would be just as opposed to therapists. in psychology than they would be looking on the internet to find out how to have sex.
No, this is like some moral oral sort of stuff, like naivety upon naivety. It's just their mind is in a, both of their minds were in a different spot altogether. And even if one was kind of harboring thoughts about something sexual or deviant, they're not going to act on it because it's impure. They wouldn't want to be the one to push that to take the apple from the tree of knowledge, per se, or anything like that. Like, I'm elaborating here, but do you follow where I'm coming from? Like, isn't that strange? Like, that they would not even consider it. That they would go to the length of seeing a therapist and being like, or like a marriage counselor, I think it was. And they're like, hey, we were told like we'd get married and have kids, but that second part, we don't quite understand. What blows my mind is that this was just like a couple out and about. This wasn't like, you know, Mennonites or anything. Like,
Mennonites know how to fuck, son.
They're still around, right? So, I mean, somebody's getting the point across. Or at least they have like more of a comfortable discussion or a realistic approach to their bodies and everything.
And they're just animals, man. They rip off clothes. They're sweaty, these Mennonites.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't care where they stick it, so long as their dicks get wet. Mennonites want to fuck. But
that churning butter motion is pretty seductive, too.
You got that right. But I don't. Yeah. I just can't understand. Like, I would think, like, they knew about kissing these people, I would think, right?
They might know about kissing. Have you ever seen, like, awkward videos of virgins who have been saving themselves for marriage kissing for the very first time at weddings?
I've seen lots and lots of virgin videos.
Isn't that bizarre? No, I'm not talking about those virgin videos. I'm talking about like...
You're not talking about the amateur films?
No, I'm talking about like... these are amateur films, but they're they're wedding ceremonies.
No, I have not seen that. Are they kissing?
So awkward. So awkward. You need to check some of these out. It's like...
Are they just publicly available?
Yeah, on YouTube. Like, never been kissed. Hold on.
Go back to the 90s, faggots!
I just did that to kill time.
Yeah, it's fine. There's these weird videos of people who have been saving themselves from kissing for their first... Oh, Jesus. This is horrifying. Yeah, I mean, it's not horrifying, like... At first, you're like, hey, that's kind of sweet in a way, but and here's the result. Check this out.
Okay.
Sunday.
I'm 30, and I'm a virgin. I'm 29, and I'm a virgin.
I'm not a virgin entirely by choice.
We're saving our first kiss for our wedding.
I now declare you to be husband and wife. Ryan, you may kiss your bride.
Really?
Yes.
Now check this out.
Virgin Diaries, an all-new special, Sunday at 9, only on TLC.
Yeah, that's really kind of hot, to be honest with you. But that's like how you kiss when you first start kissing. I mean,
I don't know.
That's how you kissed when you were in fourth grade, and you know it, Mr. Frisbee.
I never kissed anyone in fourth grade.
When did you start kissing?
Not until like middle school or high school.
Not until a couple of weeks ago.
Now, like, but I mean, even in that case, like, I was watching John Cusack movies and other films where, like
have never seen John Cusack movies?
I'm guessing not. Like, they've never, you know, thought, like, hey,
okay,
so it's almost like two horses trying to kiss. That's how these people are kissing.
That's the way Matthew Broderick kisses, by the way.
and you know what? I was actually thinking about it. Like, going back to the Mennonites thing, like, why would they have a more of a natural inclination or an understanding of it? Well, thinking about it, like, they actually live on or near farms most of the time. At least the Amish do. So they would actually see, you know, barnyard coupling. That would be a thing. Like, it's just part of your day to day.
Well, and they've got beards. So when you're a dude hanging out with a beard all day long and there's women around you, like, I mean, you're just making panties wet the entire day. So, I mean, sex just comes naturally.
True. I mean, beards do contain, like, 90% of all male pheromones.
That's true.
So,
but still, like, these people... All right, we can assume, then, that these people you're talking about kissed on their wedding day. And being as to how this was this guy's first kiss, his penis was immediately hard. His penis was probably hard the entire wedding ceremony because he knew he was going to kiss at the end of it. That's how your penis works at this stage in your life before sex.
But again, like, I'm guessing he's probably thinking, like, this is a naughty thing. This is probably impure.
Hopefully, if he's doing it right. But I mean, he would, but I'm talking about just purely physically, like, he would be kissing and then his penis would get hard. And then he would have to know that his wife doesn't have a penis, I would think. I just don't understand the possibility that people just wouldn't know how to have sex.
I think it's a possibility only if the social conditioning is there to, you know, make people, to force people not to think about those things, to not consider their own sexuality or explore it.
I don't know. I think human nature and human hormones and stuff outweigh any social conditioning. That's why we have murder and pornography and
but we have access to those things. We have access to pornography. We have access to murder, Parker.
I don't know. I think even if you don't have access to murder, you still end up murdering. Like that time that young Smeagol found that ring in the lake and he killed his buddy so that he could keep it to himself.
You're real fucking pumped for this Hobbit movie.
Yeah, he didn't know anything about murder.
I think the ring put that into his head, though.
Well,
it's like, I have to get rid of this person, make him drown.
If there's one thing I know about being engaged, the ring will put it into your head that you're going to get fucked hard, son. And that's really what should have been happening here.
Whoa. There's
I don't know.
Part of this is, to be honest, coming from a favorite David Bowie song of mine called Drivin' Saturday. It's on Aladdin's Sane album, and it's about a post-apocalyptic future where a city of teenagers who do not know how to have sex are watching pornos at a drive-in so they can learn how to have sex with each other. But that's a song. It's totally fictionalized, even if it is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's... I don't know.
That has nothing to do with anything. I just like that song. I want to bring it up. I'm just saying it's possible. Like, they're not in the environment to ever have that as a consideration, to ever have it even pop into their minds.
Then
they might have the hormones activating everything and being like, oh, why am I having these thoughts every time I look at a girl's breast or something? And then they might, like, you know, whip themselves or do like a ton of Hail Marys or something. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm sinning. It feels like sin.
Did somebody tell you how to have sex before you had sex?
Not like instructionally. I didn't take the advanced class, but...
Then how did you know how to put it inside the penis, I mean?
I don't know. It was just like... It's a step-by-step process, I guess.
Man, your testosterone just takes over and you just need to put that penis in.
That's not innate knowledge. That sounds horrifying, by the way.
It is horrifying.
Unforgivable. But
I don't know,
man, just like, it's exploration, all that kind of stuff, dating, and like going back to that other discussion we had with like dating expectations of sex, like there was no expectations of sex when I was first dating or anything. Like, I was pretty much mortified, like I was gonna make an ass of myself or something. What about you? How did it take place with you?
I saw hundreds of hours of footage before the time came for me. I don't know. I guess, yeah, I guess if you don't have pornography, then maybe that's why they know how.
Not even a Playboy or anything. Not even a Victoria's Secrets magazine. Like,
yeah.
That dude had no idea what was going on underneath those clothes.
I guess.
And, likewise, she probably had no idea either, considering that they both had to go to a counselor.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, if it wasn't for The Devil and Miss Jones 3 and Flaming Mattresses, then maybe to this day I still would have never had sex because I wouldn't know how to. Maybe you've got a point here.
Like, did your family ever have like Cinemax or anything when you were a kid?
Oh, heavens, yes.
And what was it? David Duchovny and the Red Shoe Diaries?
Yeah, I was watching the Red Shoe Diaries. I was watching Silk Stockings.
I remember seeing that show when I was like 7 or 8, and I was just so confused. I had no idea what was going on at the time. Like, why do adults do this? That was my question.
Maybe you're right here. Maybe they didn't know how to have sex because they didn't have Lois Aries to show them. And Vanessa Del Rio.
I don't know who any of these people are, by the way.
You got to be an old school aficionado, man. You can't be into this new porn, like China porn, like you are. I know the China's your favorite porn star.
I am not into China porn. Stop saying that.
Well, I guess that's the end of the show then. Because we have nothing left to talk about here, since you don't know who Vanessa Del Rio is.
This is where we part ways.
Yep, this is the last episode.
If you change your mind, people can find us at poolpartyradio.com. Of course, it's our blog site. You can also go to iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Check out old episodes. Get your iPod and shuffle on for those long days at work. You can follow us on Twitter, at Park Arizona and at Jason Frisbee. And at Pool Party Radio, giving you updates about the show, goofy stuff, who we're having on. Also, be sure to visit the Red Band Network, redbandnetwork.com. And you can check out Pot Awful, Ear Candy, The Green Light Show, and us.
Yeah.
It's a great all-encompassing site.
We're a fun family of podcasting.
Indeed. So we're a podcast surrounded by other funny podcasts. They're all great. Check them out. And if you have any questions or any inputs or any insights or general complaints, you can send them to poolpartyradio@gmail.com. That's our email address. We'd be so grateful to hear from somebody.
Indeed. Go ahead and put your fingers in the air so Frisbee can see where you're at.
That's the only way they can determine where someone is location-wise. GPS does absolutely nothing for me. I physically need to see fingers in the air. I actually knocked people out of my way walking down the street today. There was like an old woman, I'm certain, just by sound. But yeah, I was marching through headstrong. And only when the person was trying to hail a cab was I like, oh, there's someone. I thought I was going through bushes or something. It was strange.
Yeah, also next week on the show, we're going to have Jeremy Morrison from Acid Pop Cult and Faith Von Awesome, who was once a guest on Junk Food Dinner. And so that'll be a fun show. So until then, this is Parker for Jason Frisbee saying, always fuck you, Chelios. I knew exactly how to put it in.
So you had notebooks detailing what to do.
My penis was hard. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a stinger, I think.
Ha ha ha.